how grateful I am for the experience that I've had over the last 17 years post-diagnosis. It's such an opportunity to look at life through that different lens. And I encourage the listeners to consider how they're looking at life without having to go through some enormous event like I did. It's such an opportunity on a daily basis to have that reflection.
Welcome to the Smart Business Transformation Podcast, the show for executives with a growth mindset that are leading transformation programs. I'm your host, Ben Ramsden, and this week we're talking about possibly the most important thing in your life. Sorry, that kind of sounds a bit dramatic, but just bear with me and let me explain. In transformation programs, things get very busy. People are quite often under pressure, leaders, team members, all under the pump, may well be experiencing things and doing things they've never had to do in their career before, all sorts of different requirements and high expectations. And during these times, resilience becomes really, really important. And by resilience, I don't just mean surviving what you're going through, but also thriving. How to achieve sustainable high performance and actually achieving things that you and your colleagues have never been able to achieve, possibly in your life ever before. Well, for me, I was extremely fortunate to work with a couple of people in the resilience and sustainable high performance space a few years ago who I consider to be global experts in this area. And I'm absolutely delighted that one of them, Stuart Taylor, CEO of SpringFox, has joined us on the podcast today so that you can hear his story and benefit from some of his expertise. Look, I'll let him introduce himself directly to you.
I, as you mentioned, lead SpringFox, which is an organization working with organizations on sustainable high performance and resilience. Before I did that, though, I actually started my career off in the military, was an aeronautical engineer, an officer, and which I thoroughly enjoyed. And then I headed off and spent a lot of time with KPMG consulting division, then with corporate at Heinz. And during my time with Heinz, I started experiencing some symptoms. And by the time I went and found a doctor to explore this, I was diagnosed with a grade 3 brain tumor. And on the back of this was given a 2.5-year prognosis. I'm really happy to say that that is around 17 years ago now. And so it's been a very challenging journey, but in so many ways, such a positive journey of reflection and change and adaption to a very difficult situation.
I was very fortunate a few years ago to join a course that you and Sven Hansen ran on the whole subject of resilience. You're now CEO of SpringFox. Can you explain to us how life moved on after that diagnosis in 2002, leading to the creation of SpringFox?
Yeah, sure. Look, it was a very, as you can imagine, a very caught in the headlights type moment. Prior to that diagnosis, I was at the age of 32 when I was diagnosed, and prior to that, I was this bulletproof person who was on the road to senior leadership roles, and really just pushed very hard during that time in terms of hours and pressure and so on. And, you know, it was quite incredible having been diagnosed to realize, firstly, how short life is, and how confronting it is when you realize that you aren't bulletproof. It was an amazing experience for myself, but also for my family, particularly my wife, who at the time we had three kids under five. And so it's certainly not the news that you are wanting to be receiving. And in a way, I became the fourth child, the project to support. And so you can imagine the pressure that she was facing to deal with this news. And so as we did lean into this challenge and go through conventional medicine, if you like, in terms of surgery and radiotherapy, I also happened to come across the Gawler Cancer Foundation and spent a lot of time with them on retreat. And it was actually this experience that gave me, I guess, some perspective to say, while the disease will do what the disease will do, I can have some bigger choices to how I live my life, which may or may not impact on the disease, but either way, I will enjoy the life experience more than I was at the time. So on the back of that, I changed every part of my life, from exercise to nutrition to mindset through to meditation, optimism, and ultimately decided at that point I needed to change my career. And shortly after that, I did go back to work, and I do remember a couple of months later sitting at my computer thinking, what the hell am I doing here? And in response to that, I did have a conversation with Sven Hansen, who you mentioned earlier, who had founded the Resilience Institute. And on the back of that conversation and over time, I decided to join him and lead the Australian firm, which ultimately became SpringFox. And what a amazing journey it was, personally and professionally, to come off the back of that diagnosis and have an opportunity to go out there and hopefully make a difference for other people who were perhaps pushing too hard or wanting to thrive, but at the time weren't doing so much of that.
It's interesting. I was probably one of those that when I met you was pushing too hard, and possibly as a result of the work that I did with you and Sven, I hadn't had an experience along the lines that you've so dramatically described to us. Yet it took, quite a major intervention on behalf of my employer, on behalf of the senior leadership team at the time, to take me and a group of us to be with you for a number of days on and off over a period of, I think it was about 6 months in all. Mm-hmm. Why is it that so many of us think that we are bulletproof and we can just keep thrashing away without without any regard for our sort of personal welfare?
Well, look, I think it's done, albeit potentially in a naive way, it's done with, for most of us, with a sense of passion and purpose and a desire to grow and learn and contribute. I think the challenge is that during that process, we can lose perspective. And I think it is fair to say, as the years spin by, we seem to be finding new and interesting ways of making things spin faster, and technology's had a huge part to play in that, I think. Equally, though, we individually have chosen to buy into that and participate in that, and I think as part of that we get caught up in this dash for cash, if you want to call it that, or this sprint. And unless we do take an opportunity to stop, step back, reflect, we just don't even see that we're in that place. And it's just we hear this so often with our participants and our leaders that this is the first time I've stopped to even ask myself some of these questions around basic stuff like how do I sleep, let alone where am I up to from a mindset or spirit perspective. You just don't tend to do that reflection perhaps as often as one could.
So for our listener today who's probably somewhere in the working hard basket department, what sort of issues may they be facing that would suggest to them it's worth taking a bit of time to, potentially reset in a few dimensions?
Yeah, I think there's different things to keep an eye out for, and I'd be surprised if anyone that is listening hasn't had some of these experiences before. And I guess the challenge is are you tuned into them, and more so tuned into them early enough and have strategies to deal to them. We have a model that we call the downward spiral, and it tries to enunciate a language that describes what happens to you when your resilience is failing. And it starts at a pretty basic level called the confusion level. And at this level, I've just got so much on my plate, I don't even know where to start. And I think most of us go there on a daily basis, and that's okay. The question is, do you recognize it, and do you delete, delegate, prioritize, and get yourself back above the line? And it's this level of confusion and intensity that we see is so prevalent in Western organizations, this busyness that has become an epidemic. Now, you stay there too long, what happens is you head south into this place called disengagement, which I guess is a cognitive condition, not emotional condition, a cognitive condition where my executive center just can't handle any more information. It's like staring at the screensaver and watching it just buzz around your computer screen, or driving home at night and you don't even know how you got there. That's that sense of checking out cognitively. So it's a real challenge, and it's really noticeable when you're doing that with the people that you love at home, and they're talking to you, you haven't absorbed one word that they've said. I mean, that in itself is just a real stark indicator that perhaps you need to take more frequent breaks, get some sunshine, go for a walk, have some coffee, whatever you need to reset. And so you can go from that confusion to disengagement, but really the next level is where it starts to get a little bit more stark. We call that withdrawal. And it's at this level that I start to talk to myself in really pessimistic language. And for most of us, we don't have that language style, that explanatory style, but when we get to this level, we do start to talk ourselves down, and bad events become permanent and broad. And it becomes, if you like, a pathway to depression if you're not careful. The next level down is really where you can notice some symptoms, to your point. We call it vulnerability. And at this level, this is where I've got no energy. I'm waking up tired. I fall asleep on the couch at night. And one of the most obvious ones is I go on holidays and I get sick. And so many people talk about how that's such a common occurrence for them. And then the last two, really, you certainly don't want to be getting down to around distress and ultimately depression. But those first four are able to be recognized. And when you do recognize them, you can actually deal to them and not let it get to that mental ill health level of those last two.
Stuart, we've spoken there about resilience in the context of symptoms and problems potentially to be solved. Can you also talk up the spiral in terms of some of the opportunities to be embraced?
Yeah, big time. And I think this is we've shown this in our global research that we released again last year, which we release pretty well every 2 years. And when you look at the positive investments that you can make in the upward spiral versus the downward spiral, the proactive things you can be doing, we've shown that that delivers a 30% reduction in mental ill health symptoms. And I'm not sure whether you're aware the efficacy of antidepressants, but if you look at a broad range of research, a meta-analysis, if you like, the impact of antidepressants is about 3%. And so the payback on proactively investing in your resilience is huge. And so to your question, we see there's five elements in this upward spiral. The first is, I call it an anchor or a ground zero. It's also called stress mastery. So the first level is stress mastery that says, how do I create an abiding level of calm? And that, if you like, is the flip side out of that confusion level that we were talking about at the beginning of that downward spiral. You know, it does start with breath. It starts being able to stabilize that diaphragmatic breath. It includes being in the present. It includes recognizing that your stress profile is caused by your brain going into the future and forecasting disaster, so bringing it back to that present. The second level, building on that, is around energize your body. And we know that the link between personal investment in your health and resilience is very strong. And so here, really practical stuff around exercising and fixing your sleep with, you know, evidence-based sleep principles like never sleeping in on the weekend, cut off coffee beyond 2 p.m., as well as nutrition is key here. The third level is around engaging emotions. And so understanding that I can choose my emotions and I can choose more functional and productive emotions that allow me to be true to my values, rather than spending time in dysfunctional rage or panic and so on. The fourth level is around training your mind. This is very much around that mindset you were talking about earlier, seeking that realistic, optimistic thinking and making choices that are positive choices rather than destructive choices. And then the top level is ultimately where resilience comes together. The first four are really important. But this last one, this one we call spirit in action, is where I get out of bed with a view to putting my whole self into what I've chosen to be part of. So it includes areas like compassion, values, trust, purpose, strengths, just to name a few that fit at that level. Yeah, so this upward spiral is requires discipline and practice to build this into your day.
Stuart, I've occasionally share your spiral with some of my clients, and I'm sure I do a very bad job at explaining it relative to you, but the impact it has on them, I find quite amazing. So I must, in my sort of fanboy mode, sort of congratulate you and Sven for producing that spiral, and thank you for talking through it with us today. And in the show notes, I'll put a link to your Global Resilience Report, and I think the spiral focuses quite heavily in that report as well, if people want to learn more.
Indeed.
Can we move on to your Global Resilience Report? That's the 2018 version, which I think has been quite recently released. What is it? Can you give us a bit of an overview about what the report's about?
Sure. So as part of our programs with our clients, they invariably include a diagnostic instrument we call the Resilience Diagnostic before the program. And in many cases, that also happens after the program. And so in this report, there are 21,000 data points over the last 4 years that's looking at how participants rating against the 60 factors of resilience that line up against those 11 levels of the model. And the 11 levels are the six downward levels and the five upward levels that we talked about there before. And so this report looks at those 60 factors and explores how that plays out from a gender perspective, from an age perspective, looking at best practice, looking at mental health, and also does a impact comparison looking at pre and post assessments where people have done both pre and post. And in this research download, that covered around 4,000 people. So we're talking significant numbers of data points to add fantastic credibility to the insights that are provided by the report. So really interesting to see how there's significant diversity at a regional level. So if you look across the world, this assessment is deployed globally through our various practices around the world, to see that the European countries come out with the highest levels of resilience, and the more Asian and particularly Australasian countries with the lowest level of resilience, and Australia is one of the lowest levels, having one of the lowest levels of resilience, which for many is quite astounding. And we seem to think we're the relaxed nation in the world. Reality is that doesn't show up in this research at all. In fact, we rate very poorly in terms of one of the 60 factors called worry. We seem to spend a lot of time worrying about the future. Maybe that's on the back of all the restructures and so on that are going on in our organisations.
I'd like to unpack the Australian result a bit more, if we may, Stuart, and to the extent you actually understand some of the underlying issues here. I've got no idea about how Australia really compares to Europe and US and other places right now, although I've worked in all those places at some stage in my career. Are you able to really work out what's going on there, or are you more focused on what to do about it?
Yes, it is definitely both. So in terms of what appears to be going on, and is I've mentioned one factor that shows up as a big concern. Another factor that also stands out is around the ability to focus. And that one in particular stands out because when you look at best practice resilience, if you want to be a resilient person, of those 60 factors, what would be the single factor that you would seek to improve and work on? It absolutely is focus. So those that are rating as high in focus are correlated with high levels of resilience as measured by our resilience ratio. So when you look at the two elements that Australia really takes a hit on, around worry, which spending time in the future, and ability to stay on task, that in a way provides a fair bit of the explanation of the levels of resilience. Now, interestingly, it's no surprise that Australia does top the list with New Zealand in terms of levels of fitness. That one you would have expected to be very high. For me, that actually is more concerning because if we didn't have that level of fitness, some of these other factors which are pulling us down perhaps would be even worse. So it's an interesting picture of where we sit.
I find that fascinating. Can we just talk about the worry and the focus? Do you believe this to be a sort of existential type issue related to what's happening to people in their lives, or is it the way that we as Aussies and tend to process everyday life?
Look, I think when we look at resilience, a big part of resilience is it's very much perception. So there's no question about that. And a big part of perception, of course, is perspective. And so you say, well, is it actually easier to live in those European countries that are doing better than Australia? Well, I'm not sure that it would be. And in fact, if you look at some of the economies in Europe, you would say absolutely not the case. And so when you look at these results, you have to ask the question, what is the mindset and perspective that we have compared to the European perspectives? And unfortunately, what's showing up here is we actually need to do a lot more reframing and perhaps get over this idea that we are the romantic notion of the relaxed Aussie. It's actually not the case, but in a way perhaps could be more the case, where we do keep things in perspective and actually focus on purpose rather than on the busyness that we seem to be preoccupied with.
So what practical steps can we as Aussies take, or our listener take, to move themselves in the right direction?
I think we can build on our assets is a really good starting point, and the fact that we are very active human beings relative to the rest of the world is a huge asset. So we can definitely start there. But when you look at all of the factors that are of challenge and of opportunity, there's nothing on this list of 60 factors that you can't actually be doing work on. So even like ability to focus, well, the first practical steps that we'd be advising our clients there, and we do advise our clients there, is to bed down a daily relaxation practice, a mindfulness practice. And over time, you actually train the brain to improve its bench strength in terms of focus. So that in itself becomes a strength rather than a risk factor. So there's nothing that isn't learnable there. It's a question of, do you take the time to invest in building these resilience assets?
We're talking about solutions and actions that people can take, and that really is what you do at Spring Fox. Can you tell us more about your organisation and what you do?
Sure, love to. We have this amazing privilege and opportunity to be welcomed into organisations, often large organisations, is where we spend a lot of our time, be it corporate or in government, to help them move through transformation. It's quite often a reason that we're called in, or it might be around going from good to great. It might be around we're going through merger and we want to integrate with other organisations. Lots of reasons why we might be called in to work with that organisation. In essence, the sort of work we do between it doing assessment, coaching and consulting is to help the leaders and staff build up skills of sustainable high performance. And emphasis on the word sustainable, I think, is key. I think we can all build high performance. The question is, what are you doing to make that sustainable? And I look back to my days as a consultant at KPMG. You know, it was definitely high performance, but the sustainability just wasn't built in there, I'm sure of it. And so what do you do on a daily basis to reinvest in self so that you can be at your best more often? And so that's the sort of work that we will do across those various interventions. We also find and more recently our work under the Spring Fox brand has expanded into three areas. One is considering where the organisation is up to in addition to the leaders and staff. So where an organisation is conducive to a sustainable high-performance culture, or whether it's actually part of the problem. And so looking at the values and the risks and the practices that might be getting in the way of leaders and staff thriving. So if you like, a consulting element to it. The second element that we've now spending a lot of time with clients on is around leadership trust. And this is clearly a topic of the day with all of what's going on in Australia, be it through the Banking Royal Commission or what's going on in Catholicism, in sport. We know there is so much destruction of trust happening. And when you get a leadership team, an executive team to focus on that topic, again, that can feed beautifully into aligning an organization to purpose rather than creating a fear-based organization. So the work we're doing there around our Trust in Action 360 is significant. And the third element is also of a digital nature, is around our digital solution, which I think, you know, takes a lot of the workshop material and allows it to be expanded over time and over geography so that the clients can sustain the change that they're trying to create.
Now, earlier on, I mentioned, I think it was a three-month intervention that you ran in a business I was working for at the time. And, that, and for our listener, that might feel a bit overwhelming. They can see there's enormous value in what you provide. What's a more sort of toe in the water or bite-sized way of moving down this path?
Absolutely. And I think that's a key point that you make. And look, we do still believe when humans experience a program over time, when people get that experience and get to play around with it, go away, practice, implement, come back, check in with others, it's over time going to be a better outcome. I think that's the evidence is very clear. However, there's a need to build trust as well with the topic, with Spring Fox, with the content. And I think that's where we do a lot of work in the area of shorter 1 to 2 hour keynotes, introductory conversations, half day workshops. I guess the content, you'd have to say, is customizable to what an organization is looking to do with the budget they've got and the time that they've got. And that's really where it's got to land. There's no perfect world to say everyone's going to want a 3 month program.
Yes, indeed. So how can people find out more about Spring Fox or potentially reach out to you if they want to know more?
Yeah, please, springfox.com is our website, and that's probably the best place to go. There you'll get to see our team and our philosophy and testimonials and media that we spend a lot of time talking in the media, so you'll see some of that thought leadership there as well. So springfox.com is the best place to go.
Well, Stuart Taylor, thank you so much indeed for joining us today. Before we let you go, are there any other points you think we should be talking about in front of our listener?
Oh, look, Ben, I would just finish by saying how grateful I am for the experience that I've had over the last 17 years post-diagnosis. And it's such an opportunity to look at life through that different lens. And I encourage the listeners to consider how they're looking at life without having to go through some enormous event like I did. It's such an opportunity on a daily basis to have that reflection.
Well, I can certainly back that. As I said earlier, I've been very fortunate to benefit from your work and that of Sven. So thank you very much indeed for joining us today, Stuart.
My pleasure, Ben.
Thank you. It's interesting, it's a few years ago now that I did the work with Sven and Stuart, and yet there's some practices that I put in place during that course that are still in my daily routine today, which I found extremely beneficial. I thought it might be useful just to share a couple of them now, a couple of the minor ones. I guess the first is that I used to think that coffee or caffeine had absolutely no impact on me. But, you know, I thought, well, you know, it's a pretty simple thing to try that Stuart and Sven have mentioned, so let me give it a go. And as a result, I've cut out coffee after 2 p.m. and I found that it's had a really useful and beneficial effect. It's really helped with my sleeping, and I mean, I'm not monastic about it, you know, I'll occasionally break the rule, but generally I'll only have one coffee a day, and generally always before 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I found it really improved my my sleeping and my general alertness, particularly at crucial times of the day. The other thing is that I suffer from high cholesterol, or the wrong sort of cholesterol. So I've taken some steps to improve my cardiovascular health, which so far seems to be working. So that's good news. And actually, just another point more generally on exercise. The course prompted me to have a really interesting conversation with my team about whether we introduced resting heart rate as one of our KPIs in our annual performance review that actually affects how much we're paid. Now, you can imagine that was quite an interesting debate, and I actually regret to say in the end we decided not to go with that. I think it was a bit too confronting or a bit too concerning for people to do something like that. But the upside was at least one member of our team treated it as being a sort of call to arms to actually get themselves fit and a lot healthier than they have been. And I know that was very beneficial for that particular individual. But on a sadder note, I've recently learned that one of my colleagues at that time has since passed away. Now, I've got no idea whatsoever about what happened and everything behind that, but I guess I've got a bit of a lingering doubt about whether perhaps a different outcome at that time may have led to a better outcome for him. But I guess we will never know. Anyway, that's it for this week. I do encourage you to have a look at the Global Resilience Report in the show notes. If you go to smartbusinesstransformation.com, that's smartbusinesstransformation.com, you can get the show notes. I'll put a link to the Global Resilience Report. Particularly look at the page where the spiral is shown. I found that as a really useful way of calibrating where you are and where your team is in the spectrum as described by Stuart, and particularly presuming you want to move up the spiral, that gives some it's a really good visual aid for that. I'll also provide a link to the Springprox website. If you happen to be outside Australia, then don't worry. Springprox, through their sister organisation, the Resilience Institute, has got partners all around the world. So I'm sure you'll be able to find somewhere else close to you. If you do want to drop me a line, then do please email me at ben@smartbusinesstransformation.com. Smartbusinesstransformation is all one word, .com. In the meantime, until we next meet, do please keep growing.